Welcome back as we continue to consider dreams and their place in the Bible. Now, I just noticed that I forgot to mention as I was looking at my notes that that last verse that I quoted from Joel about pouring out my spirit on all people, it was fulfilled at Pentecost. I suspect you knew that, but I just wanted to clarify that a little bit. Well, we're moving on from the Old Testament to the New Testament and dreams. When you start reading the Gospels, it's hard to avoid the idea that God speaks through dreams. Remember Matthew 1, the story of Joseph. This is how the birth of Jesus the Messiah came about. His mother Mary was pledged to be married to Joseph, but before they came together, she was found to be pregnant through the Holy Spirit. Because Joseph, her husband, was faithful to the law and yet did not want to expose her to public disgrace, he had in mind to divorce her quietly. But after he had considered this, an angel of the Lord appeared to him in a dream and said, "Joseph, son of David, do not be afraid to take Mary home as your wife, because what is conceived in her is from the Holy Spirit. She will give birth to a son, and you are to give him the name Jesus, because he will save his people from their sins." All this took place to fulfill what the Lord had said through the prophet: "The virgin will conceive and give birth to a son, and they will call him Emmanuel," which means God with us. When Joseph woke up, he did what the angel of the Lord had commanded him and took Mary home as his wife. Now, again, it's a dream. An angel is appearing in a dream, and Joseph takes action on the basis of that dream. Scary action, you see, because if he had divorced Mary, she could have been stoned as an adulteress. And he takes this bold step, one that puts him at risk because, you know, his wife is pregnant. And we don't know if he had questions later. You know, some of the people who attacked the Gospels said, well, she, you know, probably ran into somebody and slept with them and became pregnant and told this wild story. But Joseph has heard himself from an angel. And as a result, he moves ahead. Now, what would have happened if he had woken up and said, wow, I've been thinking about this way too much? But it's a dream. This is about the Magi. You know, they come and find Jesus as a result of being told. First, they visit Herod, and they're told by the wise men, they're told by the chief priests that the baby is going to be born in Bethlehem. So they're going to leave now, and Herod, you remember, had said, when you find him, come back and tell me where he is so I may go and worship him, when he really meant to kill him. Having been warned in a dream not to go back to Herod, they return to their country by another route. When they had gone, an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream again. "Get up," he said, "take the child, his mother, and escape to Egypt. Stay there until I tell you, for Herod is going to search for the child to kill him." Now again, two instances, two people, a dream is given about what they should do, specific steps they should take. And so they do it on the basis of a dream. That astounds me when I consider that how much far we have gotten from the idea of dreams. This one is Peter's vision. This one again is coming at a hinge point in history. Pentecost has happened. There is a new emphasis on growth in people who believe and are committed to Jesus as the Messiah. And then Peter has this vision. About noon on the following day, as they were on their journey and approaching the city, Peter went on the roof to pray. He became hungry and wanted something to eat. And while the meal was being prepared, he fell into a trance. It's interesting, you know. I'm including this in the dream thing. Trance is a little different. We'll see this. We'll talk about that later. He saw heaven opened and something like a large sheet being let down to earth by its four corners. It contained all kinds of four-footed animals as well as reptiles and birds. And then a voice told him, "Get up, Peter, kill and eat." "Surely not, Lord," Peter replied. "I've never eaten anything impure or unclean." The voice spoke to him a second time, "Do not call anything impure that God has made clean." This happened three times. Immediately the sheet was taken back to heaven. While Peter was wondering about the meaning of the vision, the men sent by Cornelius found out where Simon's house was and stopped at the gate. They called out asking if Simon, who was known as Peter, was staying there. While Peter was thinking about the vision, the Spirit said to him, "Simon, three men are looking for you. Get up, go downstairs. Do not hesitate to go with them, for I have sent them." Peter went down and said to them, "I'm the one you're looking for. Why have you come?" Now, this is a huge change in history. No Gentiles yet are being told the message about Jesus Christ. But Peter goes to Cornelius' house, and as he is telling them about the good news, the gospel, the Holy Spirit falls on these Gentiles. And all of a sudden, there's a change in the whole point of the church. When Jesus said in the Great Commission, go into all the world, you know, go into all the world and all nations, make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe everything I've commanded you, and I'm with you to the end of the age. Now all of a sudden they realize this includes Gentiles. Now Gentiles and Jews didn't get along. In fact, the Jews were told that Gentiles were filthy. In fact, many Jews, to remain pure, would cross over to go on the other side of the street if they saw a Gentile coming down. There's that kind of distrust and hatred of Gentiles. But now, the church is going to include Jews and Gentiles. It's an incredibly powerful mystery. And it all happened because of Peter's courage, based on a vision and his understanding of that vision. He had to interpret it. It was symbolic. He had the help of the Spirit's voice, but it was symbolic, and yet he made a move on basis of that that changed the history of the church. And then one more passage. Paul's vision of the man from Macedonia. Paul and his companions traveled through the region of Phrygia and Galatia, having been kept by the Holy Spirit from preaching the word in the province of Asia. When they came to the border of Mysia, they tried to enter Bithynia, but the Spirit of Jesus would not allow them to. So they passed by Mysia and went down to Troas. And during the night, Paul had a vision of a man of Macedonia standing and begging him, come over to Macedonia and help us. And after Paul had seen the vision, we got ready at once to leave for Macedonia, concluding that God had called us to preach the gospel to them. Now, the key note there is that it was at night, and yet it's called a vision. Now, the difference between vision and dream is a dream happens in your sleep, and a vision, broad definition, happens while you're awake. We don't know. This one is kind of a mixed bag. But again, there's a direction here. And Paul takes action on the basis of that direction. And he heads over to Greece. And the first city he comes to is Philippi. And you can read about all that in Acts. And you can read about that in the book of Philippians, what happens there. But all of a sudden, the church spreads to Europe. Major step. And how did it happen? It happened in this rather unique way. So that's something of the dreams as they appear in the Bible. Now, we're going to make a turn now and look at how people have thought of dreams, some of the major characters considering dreams in the history of philosophical thought, because that's where dreams usually have been placed. So we're going to go back a long, long way here a minute, and we're going to talk about Aristotle. You'll notice he was born 384 B.C. He died 322 B.C. And he lived in the Macedonian Empire. And he was somebody, as a philosopher, trying to understand what in the world are these things called dreams. And his conclusion was too much food caused a disorder in the liver, which sent humors to the brain, resulting in a bad dream. In other words, nothing important. You just ate some bad food, or you took a Benadryl, or you ate pepperoni pizza at midnight, or whatever. That was his thought of dreams. Which is, now again, there's no Christian influence on Aristotle. He didn't have anybody speaking to him from a Christian point of view or from the biblical point of view of dreams. So in his philosophy, he concludes that these things really aren't that important. That's ancient. Now the Middle Ages, they also struggled with dreams, and one of the major people, one of the major theologians still for the Catholic Church, and somebody they go back to his thought regularly, was Thomas Aquinas. Now, you'll note some things about Thomas Aquinas here. He was born on January 28, 1225. He died 1274 at the age of 48. Notice he said too much food caused a disorder in the liver, which sent humors to the brain, resulting in a bad dream. In other words, he just took whatever Aristotle had said and now made it the norm. And so dreams aren't important, at least in the Middle Ages. Now, when we get to other people, we find same thing. Here's Descartes, 1596 born, died 1650, aged at 53. And somebody, you know, he's one whose philosophy that we still study. You know, I went to a Christian college and I studied Descartes. His most famous statement was, "I think, therefore I am." In other words, who's important? Well, how do we understand humanity? And my existence is defined by the fact that I can think. That makes me different than the animals that are around. That makes me a human being. Okay, that just sidelight there. Now, the first scholar, student, researcher who looked at dreams in a different way is Sigmund Freud. You notice he's born May 6, 1856. He died in 1939, at the age of 83. And what he said about dreams, he realized that dreams were very, very significant. And so in order to interpret the dreams, he called them the royal road to the subconscious. Now, that you have to have some context for that idea of a subconscious. And here's his view of our consciousness. He said there's a conscious level to how we exist, and that's the ego. In other words, the narcissistic person who's only concerned with us, and that's, it mediates between the id impulses, which we're going to look at in just a minute, and the superego inhibitions, the things that keep us from doing everything we want to do. And testing reality, rational, the idea operates mainly at the conscious level, but also at the preconscious level. And then he said there's a superego, which is just below the surface of our consciousness. And that represents ideals and morals, striving for perfection, incorporated from parents, becoming a person's conscience. It operates mostly at the preconscious level. And then down below, on the unconscious level of our mind's existence thought, are the basic impulses, sex and aggression, seeking immediate gratification. Irrational and impulsive operates at an unconscious level. In other words, this is where we would be if we didn't have any real society around us. If we just acted from our animal urges, that would be the id expressing itself. Now, it doesn't, because we've got this superego, our conscience, which is in place, and the ego, which recognizes in society this doesn't always work, at least for most of us, except for some people who are pathologically sick and criminal. But for most of us, we don't do the things that are what we'd really want to do down deep. And so dreams come because they're at that unconscious level. They're the royal road to the unconscious. They're the things we'd want to do, but we don't. But this gives us a revelation of who we really are. That's the way he thought about it. So when he interpreted dreams, he just simply helped people understand who they were and why they would have to not do what they did. So, there are all kinds of cruel things. If you would dream of stealing something, or dream of wanting what somebody else had, or you dream about a certain person that you want to have, and it's not in a healthy way, and those kind of things, that's what dreams are. Now, later on, there was this man, Carl Jung, who was a Christian. He was born, you'll notice, July 6, 1876, in Switzerland, and he died in 1961 at the age of 85. Now, he was the first one to say that dreams reveal something about ourselves, about others, and about our life situation. And he began a listing of symbols as he worked with the people with whom he worked to him as a psychoanalyst to talk about what does this symbol mean. And as a result, he was somebody who actually began to look at the fact that some of our dreams may be significant. And he did it with more of a Christian, Bible-informed point of view. So, that's this session. Come back next time, and we're going to continue to look at the reality of dreams in our lives. So, we'll see you then.